For the second week in a row, the Green Bay Packers lost to an undefeated team, dropping the record to 6-2 on the season. Can it be rationalized as losing to two good teams on the road, or are the Packers in a funk? We'll find out with Ron Clements of the Sporting News. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about a loss to the Carolina Panthers. Normally, we'd be dissecting this with our guest. We have Ron Clements of the Sporting News set to join us. Hopefully, we'll be taking his call on air. So, we're going to recap the game until he gets back. Don't worry, I got any sort of opinions on the topic. And as we usually do later in the show, we'll start off with it today, but kind of using a roadmap for our discussion, we will use the CHIPS report that's published at 247sports.com in the aftermath of every Packers game. And you know, we, of course, give our blue chip players for the outstanding players from yesterday's game, the red chips for the good but maybe not great players, and then the cow chips, the players who didn't do so hot, to say the least. And I think in a loss to the Carolina Panthers, it's only appropriate we start with the cow chips instead of the blue chips. We'll get to the blue chip players here in a second, but I think everybody's looking for an explanation of why the Green Bay Packers lost, and we can kind of point the finger at two, but believe me, we're not going to point the finger at only two players, but these two guys had arguably the worst games on the Packers roster of anybody. And again, I use the word arguably. So let's start with safety HaHa Clinton Dix, and we start with him because I think apart from his play on the field, which was bad, but he got some extra added attention on Sunday for an incident on the Green Bay Packers sideline in which the Fox television cameras caught him basically in a verbal disagreement with defensive lineman / outside linebacker Julius Peppers. The two could be seen yelling at each other. And the exchange was rather brief, and to call this a fight, I think, would be not characterizing it correctly. Basically, defensive lineman B.J. Raji came to the defense of Julius Peppers and pushed HaHa Clinton Dix away. And the as far as the physicalness, it ended there, which was, you know, good to see by the Packers to be wise enough to show some restraint on the sidelines and not let this boil over into something bigger than it probably is. So yeah, there was one push and it ended there. There was a little more yelling for sure. But as far as the physicalness, but to get back to, you know, the impetus of this, I know sideline reporter Aaron Andrews kind of said that Julius Peppers was laying into the secondary prior to this incident being caught on camera earlier. And then it kind of spilled over later on in which Clinton Dix kind of responded to that lashing from Peppers by lashing back at him, I guess you could say. And, you know, here's where, you know, it's my take on it comes after the recap of basically just the blow-by-blow of what happened. If you're HaHa Clinton Dix, you first of all didn't play very well, and we can get into that too. But you know, before we get into that, your play did not back up your words, and perhaps even worse than that. And that's bad enough. But I mean, you are a second-year player in the NFL who has basically, and again, don't take these words so literally, but you picked a fight with a future Hall of Famer, Julius Peppers, who is 35 years old and in his, I believe, 14th season in the NFL. You are 22 years old, and you are in your second season in the NFL and haven't accomplished an iota as much as Julius Peppers did. Now, maybe someday you will, Clint Dix. You are still young. You are still have plenty in front of you yet. But at this point in time, you would be advised to shut your mouth and listen to what the veteran has to say. It didn't feel good, I'm sure, to get a verbal lashing from Julius Peppers. And you are not the only one who played poorly by any means. You have lots of company in that department. That being said, suck it up and just do a better job next time. Just listen, just take it and apply it going forward. No need to fight back. No need to be a petulant child. You just take it and move on. And it was not a good look for Clinton Dix, the guy who's accomplished very little in the NFL. And you could argue that he has taken a step backwards this year. In fact, something that's kind of caught my attention lately is I'm a little bit disappointed in the majority of the Packers' 2014 draft class, many of which you could argue have taken a step backwards this season. In addition to Clinton Dix, on the offensive side of the ball, center Corey Linsley, he's usually pretty solid, and most of the time is this season too, but he had a worst game of the year yesterday at Carolina. Tight end Richard Rodgers, you could argue, has taken a step backwards, or maybe at least hasn't progressed. Little bit disappointing for last year's draft class, who you were kind of encouraged about, but it's not helping. But to get into the play of Clinton Dix here, and kind of, you know, why maybe there was this lesson being taught by Julius Peppers to begin with, I'm baffled by the huge cushions that Clinton Dix is giving. And, you know, there seems to be a tentativeness because it's like he gave these big cushions to one Jericho Cotchery, on a longtime NFL veteran who is past his prime and is not known as like this speed burner who's going to get behind people. It wasn't Clinton Dix's fault that the pass was completed to Jericho Cotchery. Now, in fact, if we're talking first quarter here, broken play in which he gets wide open, and if you're looking for the fault in that play alone, call it that there was a three-man pass rush on this play that gave Cam Newton the time forever in the pocket to find Cotchery, who came all the way across the formation. This was such a long developing play, and at all the time in the world, the Packers had no clue there would even be a man going into that open zone on the area because it took so long and it came all the way across the field. That's Dom Capers' fault right there. But regardless, you know, Clinton Dix is doing his job as the free safety. All of a sudden, Cotchery catches the ball, and Clinton Dix just starts giving way, just starts backing up, and you know, would eventually be in on the tackle. But you are left wondering, or I am left wondering, why for somebody with as much athleticism and as much range as Ha-Ha Clinton Dix has. You can see it. He's got tons of athletic ability. Why are you not attacking this? You should be able to tackle. You should be able to go up and meet a guy like Jericho Cotcherty, who is not, you know, in his prime anymore, who is not a threat to, like, put a move on you, or shouldn't be, at least. And maybe Clinton Dix has got burned a few times because he's made poor decisions in that he'll go up and meet somebody and dip the head and miss the tackle. But, I mean, at this point, it's just getting to the point where you're like, dude, you're an athlete. You have as much athleticism as anybody out there on the Packers defense, you know, in terms of speed and range. And you shouldn't be the type of person who gets juked. You know, you are better than that. And, you know, on the touchdown, just I think it was the next series. Touchdown to tight end Greg Olsen. Again, Clinton Dix is maybe not the only person to fault on this. Several players bid on the play action fake, and there was kind of some open area in the middle of the field. But again, it's Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, again, giving too big of a cushion for as much of an athlete as he is. He's just like setting himself up for failure because it doesn't matter who's catching the ball. There's too much space between him and the football that he's taking himself out of the play. And that's what's going wrong here. That's what confuses me. I don't know if he's being coached to do that. If he's being coached, it's too much. Obviously, you need a cushion, but you know, there's when you're as young as Ha-Ha Clinton Dix is, as spry as he is, he should be able to make up for a, you know, one misstep. You know, he should be able to make up for that and still make a play on the football or the ball carrier, whatever, what have you. And it's not happening, and it's disappointing. So, you know, very deserving to be in the chips category for his play, as well as what transpired on the Packers sidelines on Sunday. On top of that, we have in the other cow chip category, offensive lineman Corey Linsley. And it has as much to do with mental errors as it does physical ones for him. And there were some physical mistakes. And the Packers allowed too much pressure on quarterback Aaron Rodgers on Sunday. They allowed 14 hits and 5 sacks. And one of the sacks was the fault of definitely Corey Linsley, who failed to pick up, I believe it was Thomas Davis, coming on a blitz right up the gut. And it was just weird because it's like Corey Linsley tried to get like a hand on him, but just once Thomas got by him, Linsley like gave up. I don't know if he thought he would get help from a running back and blitz pickup or something like that. But he went back to help and another offensive lineman, one of the guards in pass protection after Thomas got by. So it's like he gave the token effort, but then gave up from there and went back to, you know, going back to whoever was not being a threat. So I guess, you know, I'd have to talk to Corey Linsley personally to find out what happened there. I don't know the whole story, but all I know is his man got through unimpeded for the sack. On top of that, also in the first half of the game, there was a 10-yard holding penalty on Lindsey in which he basically tackled Panthers defensive lineman Kawan Short. It happened on a drive that eventually ended in a punt for the Packers, just adding to their offensive futility. And then in the second half, it was more about the snapping of the football. There was one which was at Aaron Rodgers' ankles that basically threw the timing off of a whole play. And then later on the second half, there was the moment when time was running down on the play clock. And you could tell Aaron Rodgers wanted to snap, wanted the football. Yeah, it was getting down on time, but there was enough time to get the playoff. Instead, the Packers, he calls a timeout. Lindsley actually snaps the football, but it just kind of goes, you know, scuttling by. It didn't matter because the Packers got the timeout. But it wasted a timeout for the Green Bay Packers. And this is kind of becoming, and it's not totally Corey Lindsley's fault here in the larger, you know, grand scheme of things, but the Packers are frequently wasting timeouts because they're not in the right play call or they you know, not able to adjust in time, basically, which is impacting them down the road. They probably very likely would have liked to have had some timeouts when it's late in the game there and the Packers down by 8 points and have a chance, at least a chance, to tie up the football game. Because, you're sitting there, you're 8 points down. You got to go for the two-point conversion. If you don't get the two-point conversion, you got to get the ball back again. And that's when you'd like some timeouts because you're going to kick off the football to them. And if you got a few timeouts, you at least give yourself a chance. You hope the defense gets a stop, but you're able to stop the clock between plays if you've got that full complement of timeouts. Instead, they're wasting them frivolously. Corey Lindsley not on the same page as Aaron Rodgers, who you could tell was frustrated with him. He drew the ire of Aaron Rodgers. So several mistakes from Corey Lindsley along the way. And again, when I give away these cow chips, this is just for the most egregious ones, the players with the most egregious errors. They are by far not the only ones who made mistakes. And if we're talking about offensive linemen, Corey Lindsley has company just among those five players, including Brian Bulaga, who it was kind of interesting. He was that rather flew under the radar because it happened on a Saturday, was actually added to the Packers injury report on Saturday with a knee injury. Of course they didn't meet with the media, so I'm not sure if anybody really, has gotten into, what's going on here. Is it related to the, he tore the MCL earlier in the season? Is it related to that? I don't know. But he played like a guy who was hurt, basically. I'm not sure. I saw him out there limping or anything, but he gave up, pressure off the edge. I know, including to Coney Ealy, who got the forced fumble that thankfully Aaron Rodgers was able to fall on. But still, it was given up by pressure allowed by Brian Bulaga. He got no push whatsoever in the run game as the Packers struggled by and large running the football. And Josh Sitton, it's so disappointing for a guy who was among one of the most dominant guards in the NFL from basically 2010 to 2014, one of the best guards in the entire NFL. And it seems like, I don't know if Josh Sitton is now past, it's not as if he can't play, but in this basically this stretch here in which the Packers have played poorly, the past two games in particular, you can go back to even before that, the San Diego Chargers game. Josh Sitton is making, like an error a game that he normally wouldn't make, in which he basically let Kawan Short through the interior of the offensive line for a sack. That was just kind of, you shake your head at it. Like, what are you thinking? You just let him through and again tried to, to block somebody who is less of a threat. Plenty of problems on the Packers offensive line. TJ Lang and David Bakhtiari probably did one of the better jobs. And yeah, I think Bakhtiari got beat once, but that tackles are going to give up, that outside pressure once in a while. If David Bakhtiari gives up one sack, you kind of shake your head and be like, get him next time. And I thought the holding call against him was a little bit bush league. looked like a pancake to me, if you ask me, laying the football. I believe it was the fourth quarter there. Regardless, lots of issues on the Packers offensive line. But if we get into now, so we spent what, 20 good minutes here practically on the cow chips, which, you know, there's other ones. Ladarius Gunter on special teams, he plays about a dozen snaps the whole game and has two penalties, was terrible. You know, there are other guys worthy of being in the category who didn't officially get that cow chip distinction. But anyway, if we talk about the positives here, the guys who played well, in my estimation, I thought the number one player on the day was running back James Starks, who was the one guy who had the only player on the roster who had more than 100 yards from scrimmage. And it came in both when you combine what he did in the passing game and what he did in the running game, more so in the passing game in the fourth quarter. On one drive, he basically took two screen passes. I think one went for 29 yards and one went for 30. That basically accounted for pretty much the Packers' entire total yardage almost on that drive, but ends in the touch. The second of the two receptions ends in the touchdown, which he, you know, extending to get the football over the goal line. But that just provided the Packers a spark they had been missing that game, and really got them back into, I believe that touchdown pulled them within two scores of the Carolina Panthers late and really gave them hope at that point that they could still, you know, be in it. Obviously, they didn't play well that game, but it kind of allowed them to remain in the game, if you would. And, it, you know, more so than anything, as opposed to the play of Eddie Lacy, which was concerning. And I personally am not so much, again, about the weight of Eddie Lacy. It was the fumble of Eddie Lacy that was big. And you know, from that point on forward, the Packers weren't trusting Lacy. They were going with the hot hand with James Starks, and understandably so. I had no problem with it after the fumble. You let a guy know who, if you're not going to protect the football, you're not going to play. And James Starks did. He did fine. He did good in, you know, blitz pickup a few times. He didn't do great running the football, but he did better than Eddie Lacy, you know. So James Starks, I thought, was kind of the best player on the field on Sunday. And he was joined in the blue chips category by defensive lineman Mike Daniels, who I thought, here's a guy who is giving a supreme effort, if nothing else. He didn't have a lot of success. And, you know, he wasn't joined by many teammates in making things happen either. But this is a guy who gave supreme effort on every play, and he was one of the few players to actually apply a little bit of pressure on Cam Newton on a day in which the Packers otherwise had zero sacks. Zero sacks this game. Zero on Cam Newton. And yeah, I mean, you probably play a little more coverage against a guy who's not known as a great thrower and a guy you're going to kind of almost spy as a runner. You know, have some guys waiting for him at the second level. But still, some guys up front got to start winning their one-on-one battles. And Mike Daniels did it a little bit. And that's why he gets the blue chip, is he's, you know, he's one of the few to apply any pressure up there, and did a pretty good job in helping to hold, at least when we subtract the scrambling of Cam Newton, helped limit the damage by Panthers running backs to under 100 yards. Packers run defense did okay. Not going to say good by any means, but they did okay. And the charge was led by Mike Daniels. Your red chip players, the guys who played good, but maybe not great. We're talking about wide receiver Davante Adams. And I thought what you're seeing out of him is you saw it wasn't great. And the reason Davante Adams wasn't in the blue chip category was he had the dropped pass of what could have been a touchdown on the Packers' final offensive series of the game. Rodgers hit him in the hands, and I think it hit Adams before any defenders got in there. I mean, it was almost instantaneous, in which a defender kind of came in and maybe raked his hands against Davante Adams, but it was after the ball arrived, in my estimation. It looked to be like, to me, a tough catch. It would have been a tough catch, no doubt about it. But this is why you are paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for being a professional football player, to make catches like that. And that didn't happen. But again, that was why he went from blue chip to red chip. It was still, as I said, explained in the article, a step in the right direction for Davante Adams, a guy who has been missing for most of the season with an ankle injury, and on top of that is coming off arguably his worst game of the season, maybe his career, the previous week against the Denver Broncos, in which he definitely was guilty of not being able to get open. That was, you know, there was so much attention on not getting open this past week here against the Denver Broncos. And Davante Adams was as guilty as anybody on the roster last week. And he looked good. Maybe it's because he's finally putting the ankle injury behind him. Maybe in those 6 days, he made a lot of progress in the injury department, got healed up a little bit, was able to be a little bit faster, maybe able to make a few more sharper breaks. But he comes up with a team-leading 7 catches, I believe, for maybe the final number was 93 yards or something like that. But looked good. And I thought, you know, the best play of the day, well, he made a few of them because he made the contested two-point conversion, which the Packers really needed there. You know, had they missed that, I think it still would have been a 3-score game. Instead, he pulls it to within 2. And, you know, so that was a great catch there for the 2-point conversion. And even better than that, that sideline back shoulder toe-tapping catch along the sideline was almost Jordy Nelson-esque, you know, if you ask me. That was a great play, showed great timing, showed great discipline, showed great hand-eye coordination. That was a very, very good play for the Packers to gain a first down there by Davante Adams that I thought was really, really good. And so it was just nice to see him get back to being a contributing member of the Green Bay Packers. You can argue that maybe his stats were inflated by the long pass. It was the very last play of the first half, in which time expired and the Packers gained, I don't know, 40 yards or whatever on a deep pass, but ran out of time. But I mean, that's not to take away anything from Davante. That's not his fault the Packers ran out of time. It was still a good play. And again, I'm repeating myself now, but a step in the right direction. Good job, Davante Adams. Your other red chip player from Sunday's game, linebacker Jake Ryan. And perhaps this is the one smart thing, the one good decision the Packers defensive coaching staff made. They got Nate Palmer out of the ball game. And Nate Palmer is looking like the guy out there who doesn't deserve to be on an NFL field. He's looking like he's a Canadian Football League caliber player out there. And again, I'm not going to call for the Packers to cut him. I just think, you know, I'm not sure you're going to find anything a whole lot better on the street, because you've seen when Nate Palmer's at his best, like it was the Chargers game, you can live with that effort. But the past 2 ball games, he's just been overmatched. He's a step slow. He doesn't have the instincts of an inside linebacker, maybe because he's not a natural one. But Jake Ryan, I think, steps in a difficult situation, comes in off the bench, not expected to play, and just does a solid job for the Green Bay Packers, does a better job than Nate Palmer. I was surprised how many tackles Jake Ryan made for only playing basically half the ball game. You know, he makes a team-leading 10 tackles in this game, the highlight of which was a tackle for a loss of 7 yards on Jonathan Stewart in the second half of the ball game. And again, I mean, it wasn't so much Jake Ryan. It was him cleaning up. LaTroy Guyon had a very nice stuff of, you know, basically blowing up the play, blowing up the offensive lineman and Stewart having nowhere to run. But Jake Ryan doing a good job to clean it up and take him down for the official tackle for a loss, which was great. You know, you're over time, you're going to want to see more plays like that from him because there weren't a whole lot of big playmaking type of plays, either, you know, blitzing as a pass rusher, which he did very little of, or in pass coverage, breaking up passes or intercepting them. Yeah, those are going to come. You know, we're not going to, you know, for a guy coming off the bench, for a guy in his rookie year, we're not going to get on top of him for making that. But it was just the reliable presence that Jake Ryan provided that could put the Packers in a little bit of ease. Yeah, I definitely think he is worthy of being the guy out there next to Clay Matthews. They should be relying on him. And maybe, yeah, you replace him perhaps with Joe Thomas in passing situations here and there. I got no problem if the Packers do that. But at this point, Nate Palmer should be a backup and not a starter, giving way to Jake Ryan, who is the more natural player. He just looks like an inside linebacker. He plays like one. I think he's better able to take on blockers. You know, big offensive lineman has just the technique to shed them or get around them or get by them somehow. Just a bit better than Nate Palmer. And it's probably only that difference is only going to get greater the more experience Jake Ryan gets. You do have to be very, you know, here I said early in the show, I was kind of disappointed by the play of the Packers 2014 rookie class because they seem to be going backwards. You got to be encouraged by the play of this year's rookie class in addition to, you know, Jake Ryan. You know, there were a few times where Demaryius Randall got beat deep. The one to Devin Funchess was really disappointing because Randall couldn't have played it any better. You know, what was it, a 50-plus yard game to Devin Funchess right down the middle of the field. And Randall was there. He just, you know, had the ball bent off, you know, a few inches that maybe have hit his hand, but Cam Newton just placed it in there perfectly. And it's tough. I mean, yeah, Randall, he's the one who got beaten. He's the only one I suppose you could actually point the finger at Clint Dix for not staying as deep as the deepest target, as is his responsibility on that play. But still, he gives up a touchdown as well. I believe it was to Corey Brown later in the game. But with Demaryius Randall, you know, you're getting a player who makes up for it. You're getting a guy who you see the best and the worst of him every game because he is inexperienced and he's making mistakes, but he's making plays too. Of course, coming up with the late, you know, interception, which, you know, I think actually was, and, you know, is reviewed and the play stood. I think he had possession of that football the whole time. Yeah, it was moving or, you know, like moving in his hand. I should say moving with his hand, but I think he never took that hand off the football. I think he had possession of the whole time. After the initial bobble, I think it was, you know, a worthy interception. And again, that gave the Packers hope, a chance to tie the football game, an opportunity to tie the football game. So, you know, he's making up for it. Go back to I believe it was the Chargers game that he had the big pass breakup on fourth down, last play of the game. He's showing a penchant to make the big play, coming up with an interception his second week in a row as well. big time play from Demarius Randle, and the tackle he made on Cam Newton really is an underrated play. There are very few cornerbacks in the NFL who are going to make that open field tackle when he took out Cam Newton's legs. Because first of all, there's probably not many cornerbacks that aggressive. You know, so many of them are going to let Cam Newton come to them. Demarius Randle was the aggressor. And I mean, credit him for being smart and not trying to, you know, hit him up high. He took out the legs, but I mean, just took him out. I mean, it's one of those textbook things. You take out the knees and the runner's going to go down, you know, rather than you being bulldozed over. You know, that's the way to make a tackle. Great job by Demarius Randle. It's unfortunate he gave up a few pass completions. But, you know, the more time goes on, the more experienced he's going to get and the better he's going to look, which is you've got to be really encouraged by that and the play of Jake Ryan as well. Packers could have some very good defense players on their hands here if they just, you know, keep working at it and starting to give these guys more playing time. It took a while for the Packers to give any playing time to Jake Ryan, but they really, for once, we talked about on this show earlier in the week how they deserve more playing time. Demarius Randle did. And for the first time this year, basically, Demarius Randle was a full-time player. I believe he played every defensive snap. And that was a first for the Green Bay Packers defense. They've learned he deserves to be out there all the time. And they kept Casey Hayward in the slot, which was an improvement. You know, that's where he belongs. Packers coaching staff did some better things in the secondary, especially considering, you know, they had some things to, you know, deal with there due to injury. Sam Shields didn't play. Quentin Rollins wasn't available. You know, I think they're going to be in even better shape when Shields comes back for sure. I definitely do because, Demarius Randle out there is a three-down player, is really smart. And the Packers, you know, the defense, they did that. They basically had no choice when you're down a few players. But he was out there all the time, kicked Casey Hayward into the slot in nickel and dime situations, which was smart. So good coaching there by the Packers defense. One of few, I guess, on the day, you could say. I guess that's going to do it for today's show, folks. I was hoping to get a Ron Clements call into the show. I've called him. I've left a message. I'm not sure why, you know, it's maybe an emergency came up. Maybe we'll try to get him some later point in time as well, to make up for it. But I hope I myself have provided sufficient analysis. If we want to just, briefly,
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers this Monday, it's of course talk show circuit day, the day after a game. And I think the biggest one or the most interesting one today will be Clubhouse Live, which streams live on Packers.com at 6:30 p.m. It has a pair of Green Bay Packers offensive linemen. Right tackle Brian Bulaga will be the guest of co-host left tackle David Bakhtiari. And maybe these guys can explain what went wrong, how they allowed so much pressure on quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Inexplicably, the play of the Packers offensive line has fallen off a map. It baffles me. The first, you know, the stretch of games in which the Packers won, six games, four of them had Don Barclay at right tackle, and they played better with Don Barclay at right tackle than they did yesterday with Brian Bulaga. How that's happening is beyond me. How is the Packers offensive line worse off with Don Barclay on the sidelines? I don't know. So maybe these guys will have some explaining to do, try to rationalize what went on Clubhouse Live on Monday evening, one of several appearances by Packers players. And by the way, although the show doesn't air until Tuesday, they basically record it on Mondays and it airs on Tuesday. But if you live in Green Bay or the surrounding area in which you can drive there, quarterback Aaron Rodgers is the guest on Packers Live with Larry McCarron that records Monday evening for free inside the Lambeau Field atrium. This is basically a once-a-year opportunity to see him. It's free admission into the show. Lambeau Field, I believe it records at 6:30 p.m. You could check Packers. I've got it all on today's Packers calendar at 24/7 Sports. You can go check the details there. I just forget them off the top of my head. But I believe it's 6:30 p.m. inside the club level, fourth floor, Associated Bank club level inside Lambeau Field. Free taping, free of charge to be part of the studio audience. A once-a-year opportunity to see Aaron Rodgers in person on the recording of Packers Live with Larry McCarron tonight. Records tonight, and then you can see it on air Tuesday nights, I believe also at 6:30, basically across the state of Wisconsin. There might even be a few affiliates outside Wisconsin and Michigan or something like that on the Packers larger TV network there, several affiliates. But that'll do it for today's show, folks. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. We'll be back again on Wednesday with another episode. My call to action, if you've not done so already, please, pretty please, the one small thing we ask of you, this show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. Please give us a rating on iTunes. If you could go head over there on your iTunes app or on the website or however you want to do it. Give us a rating, give us a review, keep it brief if you want, but we'd really appreciate it. Helps us get word out about the show. That'll do it, folks. We'll see you later. I'll see you on Wednesday, 8:30 a.m., every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, the live edition of the show podcasted later in the day. I leave you today with a song called Feed the Wolf by Conspirator on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go Pack Go.